From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcats Podcast. We are a part of the Arizona Daily Star. Before every Arizona Wildcats home basketball game, we always record a podcast live at Frogenfurken. And I'm here with PJ Brown, Arizona women's basketball beat writer for the Arizona Daily Star, and my co-host, Dominic Pachaco. We'll have Bruce Pasco on in just a little bit to talk about the men's side of things. But PJ Brown, special guest appearance joining the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here and to be on the podcast for the first time this season. Mm-hmm.
So, by the way, PJ's got an interesting story. You were you had surgery on your ankle, right?
Yes, I did. It was kind of interesting. I was on the way to Arizona Women's Basketball Media Day and driving, and someone pulled out in front of me, and I stepped on my brakes really quick and broke my ankle in two places.
I can't even imagine that. Yeah,
it was pretty gross.
But you had surgery.
Surgery.
And rehab, I'm
in the midst
therapy.
Of physical therapy right now for the last couple months, and it's a tough go, but we're back on, and I've been fully covering women's basketball for the past month now.
Sure.
And covered a golf tournament last week. So
shout out to Aaron Rodgers.
Yes, shout out to my boy.
And Carlton.
Yeah, and Carlton. Although I must say, I did beg him to teach me the dance, and he wouldn't do it.
I'll teach you how to do the Carlton dance. It's very easy.
You don't need the real thing. Just as good.
Well, PJ, I'm glad you're walking without any help.
Yes.
You walked with a walker and then a cane, and you kind of build up your strength a little bit.
Yeah. Now I'm unaided.
Cheer. I raise my glass to you. Thank you so much for coming on. Sure. So Arizona women's basketball, they finished off the season ninth in the Pac-12, correct?
Eighth.
And they're now taking on number 9 USC in the Pac-12 tournament. But, I mean, for you covering this team and seeing this team progress, Adia Barnes is in her third season now with the program, and they've already taken strides as a program. They brought in a McDonald's All-American and Kate Reese. They have a star player in Ari McDonald. It just seems like, although that they finished eighth in the Pac-12, you finish in the bottom half of the conference, but it's still much better than in years past. And Adia Barnes has things going for Arizona.
Oh, yeah. She's got things going in the right direction. She started the first day, it was going in the right direction. She's built culture. She's still working on the culture, but that was a big thing. They were out in the community. They're out all the time. The fans love them. People in the community love them. They get great grades. They've won the Director's Cup for the community awards at the CATSEs every year for the UA Athletics. And the development of the players on the court has been amazing. You really see this year really what Coach Barnes has done and what a great coach she's going to be in the future. I mean, even with this season, sure, how they started off, and now she's got them playing the best ball of the season, how she was able to have them put it all together and take top and go toe-to-toe with top 10 teams in Stanford and Oregon State and not back down and almost win those games. From where they came from to where they are now, it's huge.
Because that game against Oregon State, that was the final game of the regular season, and that was a tough one right there because it came all the way down to the wire.
It did. They took them to two overtimes. U of A had a chance to win it in regulation, and unfortunately, the Oregon State's Michaela Pivick tied it up 52-52, and they went into double overtime. The girls left it all on the court. And, you know, really the difference is that's a top 10 team. They've been there before. They know how to win those games.
Yeah.
Adia's girls haven't been there before. They haven't really won. They're still learning how to, when they're that close, how to pull it out. You know, good teams, really good teams know how to do that at the end. And, you know, give Adia a little bit more time, she'll have her girls going. And they'll be winning those games.
It's interesting, too, because you usually hear in press conferences, people like us ask Adia Barnes or coaches about the players. Recently, it's been and PJ, you're probably part of this, asking about the players, about Adia Barnes and how she's grown as a coach over the years. And Adia's new at this, and she's got to get used to it. She's got to kind of get her feet under her, and that's going to take time. She's obviously made strides last year and this year, and it shows on and off the court. So I think once Adia gets going, she has the pieces now to have a competitive team week in and week out. I mean, Arizona might not be winning these close games, but
sure,
they play Oregon State and Oregon last year, and they're getting blown out in both of them. So, they've already made strides.
They're right there at the surface.
Right.
I mean, they're so close to doing it.
They're competitive with some of the best teams in the country, and it's because of what Adia Barnes has been able to do with the pieces that she has. It's not just having the pieces. It's having the coach to be able to play all of them and put them together.
Right. And the amazing thing is if you watch how she coaches and how she coaches against these top coaches in the country, the Kelly Graves from Oregon, the Scott Ruicks from Oregon State, of course, Tara from Stanford, who's one of the greatest coaches of all time. When you see her coach against them and against Kaz Lindsey Gottlieb, you see her go right up against them. You see her doing things that you would think someone who had many more years of experience would do against these coaches. She's also, it's amazing to watch and listen to her when she talks about her team and how she says, if they don't improve over the season, it's on me. It's on her. It's her job. She's the coach. She's got to teach her girls how to play, how to win, how to have confidence in themselves. And she takes ownership of that, and she has done that since day one. And to see how she's grown has been tremendous. Mary Murphy, who's a Pac-12 analyst, told me that one of these days everybody's just going to say Adia like they say Tara from Stanford. She's going to be that, maybe not Hall of Famer, okay, but she's going to be that type of coach where everybody knows who she is and they all respect her the way they respect all the top coaches.
Well, and it helps too that she has that background at the U of A. I mean, people know her here. She's an easy person to rally around.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, not only are you making your team better, you're doing it as a former Wildcat and Arizona grad, and she has everyone behind her, and I think that's going to help moving forward. It's just easy for everyone to get on board, and it's exciting. More people are going to games, and that's all because of Adia Barnes.
In order to look like or give off that appearance that, hey, I'm a pretty great coach, you got to have great players go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And while Adia has taken strides as a head coach, she also has a fantastic player in Ari McDonald, who's averaging just under 25 points per game. She was named to the All-Pac-12 first team and the All-Pac-12 defensive team, which really goes to show the kind of player that she is, because not only can she score the rock, but she's also a defensive pro. She's awesome on defense.
She's a sophomore. She is. Can we talk about the fact she's a sophomore?
Yes. Yeah.
And I have to say that I'm really excited. I have two more years to write about her. This year, I watched her in practice all last season, and I know she was good because she had to sit out last year for transferring. She was the fastest player on the team. She was the best player on the team, and she couldn't play in games. Mm-hmm. So I knew she was going to be good this year, but just how good, it's just blown my mind. And watching her most of the season play on TV and then getting to go to the USC game in person for the first time, seeing her play in person is just incredible. The moves she makes, the determination she has, she's never giving up, the moves she makes on the court, whether she's distributing the ball, whether she's driving herself, whether she's getting a steal. The last game, I actually watched her on the defensive end, and I watched her eyes.
Yeah.
And it's incredible the vision she has on the court and how she looks to the side, like she's looking to see where she has space to go and try to tip that ball to get a steal.
She reminds me, if I had to compare her to an NBA player, she's very Chris Paul-esque. Adia Barnes has even said that. She's like, if I were to compare her to any NBA player, it would probably have to be Chris Paul just because of her skill set of all things that you just mentioned.
This is probably an unfair comparison, but bear with me. just listening to PJ talk about seeing her in person for the first time reminded me of how I felt the first time I saw DeAndre Ayton play in person. And I'm not saying she's
interesting. Go on.
So I'm not saying that she knows she's the number one pick. She's the best. I'm not saying that, but she generates excitement where you can walk into a court and look at, have no idea what's going on. You may have not watched a college basketball game all season, but you look at the court and you go, that player's special. I want to watch them. You could go to an Arizona game last year and only watch DeAndre Ayton for the entire game and be pretty entertained.
Yeah.
Just watching him, his craft, him play the game of basketball. And Ari McDonald is kind of the same way. You walk in and you want to see her.
She's worth the price of admission.
Right, exactly.
She is, totally. Yeah. She's a special player and one of the best players in the country. Mm-hmm. She leads, obviously. She's third leading scorer in the country. And she's a well-rounded game. She's not just one-dimensional. And I think that's part of what makes her so special. And she works on her game every day. She works on being a leader. And I've even seen her grow as a leader during this season. And just how she talks about her teammates after a game, even if it's a tough loss, how proud she is of her teammates for sticking it out, for not giving up, for leaving it all on the court. You know, that's just, like I said, she's a special person and a special player. And, you know, it's just great to be able to watch her day in and day out.
And they got two more years.
Yes. Two more years.
She has two more years.
Well, the Arizona Wildcats, the eighth-ranked Arizona Wildcats in the Pac-12, they take on USC in the first round of the Pac-12 tournament in Las Vegas at MGM Grand Garden Arena. Tip-off set for 3 p.m. You can watch that game on Pac-12 Networks. Well, PJ, thank you so much for joining the podcast. It's always a pleasure talking to you. And glad you finally came out and had a guest appearance on our pod.
Thanks, and thanks for having me. It was a blast.
Absolutely. All right. It's PJ Brown. PJ, real quick, where can we follow you on Twitter?
At PJBrown09.
Okay. You heard it there. Go on Twitter and give her a follow for all Arizona women's basketball coverage. We'll get Bruce Pascoe on in just a minute here. Dominic, it is the last podcast of the regular season. Arizona takes on ASU Saturday afternoon. I'm pretty excited for this game. I mean, this is a huge game because while we sit here and talk about the Pac-12 race and the Pac-12 standings, believe it or not, mathematically, Arizona is still not out of contention for the top four spot in the Pac-12. So there's still a little bit of hope for Arizona to have a first-round bye in the Pac-12 tournament. But like Sean Mueller said during his press conference earlier this week, this is quote, I don't like our odds.
I don't like our odds.
Coach Miller's being a realist here when talking about the Pac-12 tournament race. But Saturday is going to be a redout. Arizona basketball has already announced that. It's going to be a redout. It's the last game of the season. And it's senior day, right? Mm-hmm. And this is a weird senior day because Sean Miller always has like one guy that's been here for the last 4 years. Where this year's senior day is a little bit different because you have graduate transfers, guys that have only been here for 1 year.
And I'm thinking of the last time, I'm trying to think of a year to compare this to, like the Ryan Anderson, Mark Tollefson year. But even then, they had Gabe York was a senior that year.
Yeah,
right? So,
yeah.
I mean, they still had players who had been in the program for a long time that they needed to honor. But this year, yeah, I mean, you're right. It's just the pretty much the grad transfers.
Uh-huh. I just think it's weird because Ryan Luther and Justin Coleman, they've only been here for 1 year. And day's going to be about them.
Right, and it's not like it's been a shining year for Arizona basketball.
I know, seriously. Bruce Pascoe joining the program. What's going on, Bruce?
Well, my thoughts on that was that senior night really isn't the same anymore pretty much anywhere at a high level because you guys leave.
Yeah.
You know, if they're really good. And so the guys who stick around as a senior are usually on the bubble of not being able to go pro or below that. But this year, Arizona, it's been a challenging year for those two guys, but it's almost like, you know, what I look back with them is that they took a big leap of faith to spend their senior year here or their graduate year here. And, they certainly had other options.
How would you kind of summarize Justin Coleman and Ryan Luther's year here at Arizona? Because one of them's a co-captain, which is Justin Coleman. Coleman had his big moment in Maui, but then he's been here and there, and the games where he doesn't score, he is one of the leaders in assists. But there's also been times where he's gone completely MIA. He's been quiet. I'm having a hard time trying to figure out Justin Coleman's year, where Ryan Luther, it seemed like he was kind of having a hard time getting used to Sean Miller's offense. And then as of recently, I mean, he's been playing pretty well, made some three-pointers over the last few games. Even the last time Arizona played ASU, he was 5 of 8 from three-point range. But when you look back at this year's team with those two guys, how would you summarize their year?
I think they've actually been about what I expected. I mean, Justin Coleman probably a little bit better, and Ryan Luther maybe a little bit different than I expected, more of a stretch four than I even pictured him being. But he's gotten, especially lately, been kind of on a roll with that.
And yeah.
One thing I didn't know about him that I don't think even Sean Miller realizes, how unselfish he is and how much he had to prod him to shoot. And, you know, what was that moment, I think the Washington game that Miller talked about, where he basically sat him down afterwards and said, "Look, if you don't take this shot, it's a, you know, you're being unselfish." So
you're being selfish by being unselfish.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember he did the same thing with T.J. McConnell years ago, where if McConnell, because that team he played on was so good, if McConnell didn't take a shot when he was open, it would allow defenses more and more to worry about the other guys. So Miller was basically telling him the same thing: you've got to shoot when you're open to keep these defenses honest. And in Luther's case, they also, more than that, in this case, they just need points, and Luther can get them. And if he has an open look, it's way better than most other guys getting a contested or even an open look in some cases.
I've hyped up Justin Coleman a lot this year, and I've kind of made him the X factor of sorts, because when he plays really well, Arizona is pretty competitive.
You go back
to Maui, his best game of the year against Gonzaga. They were competitive, and they hung with him for the entire game. And that's the number one team in the country, Gonzaga. And even against ASU earlier this year, when he had 19 points, 9 assists, I mean, he didn't shoot well from the field. And we talk a lot about this with guys like Brandon Randolph. Who Justin Coleman, I think, was 5 of 14 from the field in the game against ASU, but he had 19 points, one of his best games of the year, because he got to the line. He was 6-6 from the free throw line, 5-14 from the field, and his impact was felt on the court. 9 assists, you can't ignore the impact he had in the game, and Arizona almost beat ASU.
I think that's also kind of Brandon Randolph's biggest downfall, is when the shots don't fall for him. I'm trying to figure out where he contributes, because you see guys like Dylan Smith and Devonair Dutrieve, they're able to grab rebounds if the shot's not falling. But for Brandon Randolph, when the shots aren't falling, he's just completely taken out of the game. Whereas you look at other, big-time scorers, if the shots aren't falling, what do? You get into the lane, you draw contact, and you get your points from the free throw line. Brandon Randolph has only attempted 2 free throws over the last 5 games. Like, that's not good. And it's not like he's out here rebounding the ball or distributing the ball. So I feel like Brandon Randolph is one of the more one-dimensional guys on this Arizona team, which I can't believe I'm saying it, because we were hyping him up during the non-conference late.
It's actually been an issue that I don't think has been talked about a lot, because they depend on him so much. They're so desperate for scoring, and he's their, probably, arguably, their most talented scorer when it's there. So I think there's just been a sense of this program, like, quietly trying to prod him, keep him confident, and not talking a lot about the negatives. But it has been an issue, as you pointed out, both in aggressiveness and certainly in confidence.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like you said, when Brandon Randolph's on, I mean, Arizona's pretty tough to beat. Just like what Dom said with Justin Coleman, when he's on, Arizona is pretty tough to beat. And what did Brandon Randolph do during that ASU game? He had a pretty decent game, right? It was like 17 points. So
17.
Yeah. But the biggest X factor in that game was they didn't have Brandon Williams, mm-hmm. which was huge, because we've seen how Arizona has struggled without him in the game. And that could even be from a defensive standpoint, because Remy Martin had 31 points, which was a career high. I'm not sitting here saying Brandon Williams was going to put the clamps on Remy Martin and completely shut him down, but at least would have helped out defensively.
No, especially in an overtime game. I mean, there's no question about that. ASU, looking at the stats here, ASU shot 72% in the second half and made 3 of 6 in overtime. So clearly, I think there was a factor of that, where those guys just kind of melted down a little bit. And that's why Miller's talked a lot about having Williams back. Forget about the playmaking and all that, which he does, but I think if you're Miller, as much as anything, if not more than anything, is the fact that Brandon Williams gives you some depth in your perimeter rotation that allows you to keep your guys sharp defensively. Yeah. And that did not happen in that game.
we've talked before about how Brandon Williams makes others on the court better, specifically Brandon Randolph. You go back to that ASU game without him, and just looking at it, a lot more simpler here. They're starting five. I really started that game for Chase Jeter, but Chase Jeter played the bulk of the minutes. So if you kind of combine Jeter and Ierley into that fifth starter, and because Jeter wasn't really a sixth man. He played the majority of the minutes. Their sixth man that game was Alex Barcelo. I mean, Brandon Williams brings depth to the team, more to a team that needs it, and Arizona's not beating ASU with Alex Barcelo as the sixth man. I don't care how many shots he's hit off the bench as a sixth man this year. He can't carry a team like Brandon Williams can.
Yeah.
And Williams has, like I said, makes players around him better. He's another scorer. He's another weapon. He's someone that ASU has to put a body on at all times. And kind of like Brandon Randolph and Justin Coleman, when he gets hot, Arizona's competitive and they can hang in any game, really. But again, we haven't really seen all year these guys all heat up at the same time. We haven't seen Coleman and Brandon Randolph and Coleman, Randolph, and Williams play well together, especially with Chase Jeter on the court with them. So it'll be interesting to see if they can do it against ASU. They played well with a limited team, with limited depth in the first game against ASU, and took them to OT, and that was on the road. It's senior day. There's a lot on the line. Sean Miller has talked, even though they're unlikely to get a bye in first round bye in the Pac-12 tournament, Sean Miller has talked about how important it is to gain momentum more than anything else. This is their last chance to do that. They're either going to go into the Pac-12 tournament first round with a loss to coming off back-to-back losses, or they're going to do it with a win against a good ASU team. Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest X factor for this game, or something that you guys are looking forward to most? We just talked about it. Brandon Williams is back. It should be interesting to see how Arizona plays when you have a guy like him back into the lineup. But what's going on with Chase Jeter? Because he played against Oregon, but it was only for 6 minutes after he had that knee issue from a little kerfuffle with Trace Tinkle, and he got tangled up and his knee got messed up. But John Miller said it was just a bruise in the knee, but he was limited against Oregon, which it looked kind of worse than a bruise to me, but Sean Miller said he missed practice earlier this week, and we don't know if he's practicing with the team yet. Bruce, how do you assess Chase Jeter's situation?
It was very interesting the way he handled that, and he even brought it up in the context of Brandon Williams. He was talking about Brandon Williams is back, he's practicing, he's full go, and then he just added a sentence that Chase is not practicing. So it made me wonder if, and then the fact that he said it was pain tolerance, it made me wonder if they're just waiting for Chase to be mentally ready to play. And he's got enough time here. I think he'd probably be fine. But certainly it was a little odd the way they've been talking about it.
It helps, I'm sure, that they only have one game this week, that there's not a game before ASU. I mean, he has till Saturday to get fully healthy. If there was a game on Thursday this week, I think it's safe to say probably wouldn't be at full strength, or, I mean, might not even play. But the fact that he has till Saturday to get ready for ASU certainly helps, whether that's with a limited or absolutely no role in practice. They need to get Chase Jeter healthy because they need him on the court against ASU.
And it also helps. It's spring break. Mm-hmm. So you're here by yourself. You don't have to go to class. You don't have to really do anything but rehab the knee and get ready for Saturday.
Yeah, although he's already graduated, so he's... I don't know that his schedule is that difficult. Right. He's a smart guy. He probably gets through it pretty fast. He can rehab as much as he wants. It's just a matter of pain tolerance and possibly assessing whether he feels he's at any risk. And they're saying he's not. You know, Miller said it's comparable to what Alex Barcelo had. He banged up his knee against Colorado. He came back. And that game was not good, but then came back the next Thursday and was fine. So I think that, you know, they're hoping anyway that would be the case with Jeter having even more time this time.
I'm excited. We talked after the Oregon game how Miller was out-coached by Dana Altman in the second half. I'm excited to see how Miller and Bobby Hurley coach against each other this game. Just because...
And McHale.
First of all, it's Bobby Hurley, so it'll be over-under on how many minutes go by before he gets a tech.
I'm going to say... A little over 30.
Second half?
It's going to be latter part of the second
midway
half.
Through the second half? Yeah. I like that. So, look, Bobby Hurley is always entertaining. Him and Sean Miller on the court at the same time. It's a spectacle. It really is. But you remember Arizona's seven-game losing streak. They got torched game after game by one player. And that one player last time they played ASU was Remy Martin. Went off for 31 points. And Zylan Cheatham had a pretty good game inside. Not really to his standards, how you would imagine he'd go off against a depleted Arizona roster. But They're going to have to stop Remy Martin. They're going to have to stop Sonny Cheatham. There's a lot of guys on ASU that Arizona's going to have to D up. So after having already played them, after having an entire week of preparation, it'll be interesting to see what Sean Miller can drop on defense with this team that we've seen struggle on that end of the floor for much of the season.
Yeah, just the thing strikes me is that ASU really needs to be playing with desperation here. Arizona can talk about wanting to end on a good note, and I'm sure they do. But the ASU's got to have a fire under their belly right now because they're on the bubble, and they need to win this game because they don't want to go in the Pac-12 tournament with a loss here. If they do, that means they probably either have to win the Pac-12 tournament or get to Saturday. But if they can win this game, then they might only have to win one other next week. And maybe they can slide in even not winning next week at all.
Mm. All right, guys, real quick. So we only have a few minutes left here. What is the most memorable Arizona ASU game that you guys can think of off the top of your head? I mean, you can go back to the James Harden years.
What about James Harden?
No, it was that Salim Stoudemire hit almost a buzzer beater or game winner up there in Tempe, I think.
I think we talked about that the last time we had an Arizona ASU podcast, or the last time we talked about it on here. Was Salim's buzzer beater. Shot, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't a buzzer beater. It was like 2 seconds left in the game.
Like that, yeah.
Ike Diagu played for ASU at that time, right?
I think so.
Jeff Pendergraf, was he?
That was a long time ago.
Yeah. Jeff Pendergraf, a freshman. I always go back to the James Harden years just because
exactly.
I remember
that's what I was gonna say. Yeah.
Them just completely dominating Arizona. Even that one year, they beat them 3 times, including the Pac-12 tournament.
Yeah.
I never thought at that time. Did you think at that time, Bruce, that James Harden would turn out to be the NBA player that he is now?
No, of course not. I don't think anybody did. But he was definitely an NBA player. You knew that. Yeah. I mean, when they recruited him, Herb Sendek hired his coach to get him, helped get him go there. I mean, it was all a big deal. You knew he would be the best player Sendek had. But no, to be the, perhaps the MVP in the NBA, no, you didn't see that. Mm-hmm. I mean, just because, he's evolved as the NBA game has evolved, and it just so happens that what he does is really a perfect fit for the modern NBA, really.
Mm-hmm. Oh, just the fact that ASU was able to beat Arizona 3 times that year, it was a direct result of James Harden, so that's not happening anymore. I mean, you see Sean Miller's tear against Bobby Hurley. I mean, ASU rarely beats Arizona these days, and they did it 3 times in a season because of James Harden.
What was the most hostile Arizona-ASU game that you can remember? Because the one that I can think of, first one, is No Easy Buckets. Kevin Parham going up, was it Ty Abbott?
Yeah. But yes, and that was because of the way the game played out. But as far as the environment from tip off to the end, I think it was last year when ASU was still pretty hot and everything. This year's was pretty good as well.
Oh, okay.
Just up there. I mean, as far as the crowds here, they've been, hostile towards ASU all
sure.
the time. But just as far as games up there, I think the last couple of years when they've taken the curtain back, filled the place up, the student section's full, and the students love Bobby Hurley, and just the energy you sense in that arena really is, I think it's been unprecedented in the last couple of years.
I remember, I can't remember, what year did Bobby Hurley come here?
I think this
15,
is his,
right?
His yeah. fourth year, right?
Yeah.
It had to be one of those games. I think Arizona was ranked. It was at McHale Center, and it was one of Bobby Hurley's first games I remember because he got a tech. And McHale was just going absolutely nuts. I mean, when Bobby Hurley gets a technical...
He got thrown out, right.
I'm not even remembering the full story. He got tossed to McHale Center.
Yeah, he got two techs.
Right, he got two techs, tossed to McHale Center.
No, that was in Tempe, I believe he got thrown.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, there was one time in McHale Center where he at the very least, was teed up. Maybe, unless I'm just thinking of the Tempe game.
Was he like holding the ball and like not giving it back to the refs or something?
Mm-hmm. But that might have been regardless, any game that Bobby Hurley gets teed up is a game I want to be watching. So there's a lot of things to watch on the court on Saturday.
It's going to be awesome.
He's one of them.
It's going to be awesome
I was watching the ASU-Oregon State game on TV the other day. ESPN does this thing. What channel is the game on this weekend?
CBS.
Okay, so maybe they won't do it. But on ESPN in the Oregon State ASU game, they had a Bobby Hurley cam where for, minutes at a time, they put a little box in the corner. They'd have the game on, and then in a little box, it'd have Bobby Hurley, just a straight camera on him. They should do that all the time.
They should do that when Sean Miller's in close games and he takes off his jacket and he's just wearing the white shirt.
We need
his sweaty Sean Miller.
You know how for national championship games, like football, they do different, like on ESPN, they'll have the game, then ESPN2, they'll have like the game room where they have like a bunch of different screens of people watching it. They need to do that and only have like screens on Sean Miller and Bobby Hurley on ESPN2.
Yeah. Miller's been Miller this year, though.
Yeah, I know he has. Absolutely. Maybe not against Bobby Hurley. We'll see.
Maybe
he'll heat up. Yeah.
Not even wearing a tie.
Tyler Sean Miller.
It's like on vacation in Miami.
vacationing.
Like he's like on like a business trip. It's weird. I never thought I'd ever see Sean Miller not wear a tie.
He's done it occasionally in the years past, especially recently, but now it sounds like he's talking about just going his way for the duration.
Well, this is your episode of the Sean Miller Fashion Show. Yeah. Arizona ASU at McHale Center. Tip-off set for 2 p.m. on Saturday. You can watch that on CBS, or if you're following us on Twitter, make sure you give the Wildcaster a follow. We'll be providing live coverage. You can also download the Wildcaster app, which is available on the App Store and Google Play. And you can subscribe to the Wildcast podcast on Apple Podcasts. Special thanks to Frog and Firkin for another fantastic podcast. We always appreciate you guys. Till next time, we'll see you then.
Hi, Wildcaster fans. Come check out The Point Being, the Arizona Daily Star's opinion page podcast. We talk about current events, what's going on in the world, the letters page, and more. So check us out at thepointbeingpodcast.com.